The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Backstory. Let's hear it on Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee with Roberta McCulloch-Dews. Thanks for tuning in. So today we have with us Catherine Potts. She's the Chief Learning and Engagement Officer at the Norman Rockwell Museum. Catherine, who joined the Rockwell in 2024, previously worked at the Whitney, where she was the chair of education and was a driving force behind their artist-driven education series. So there's lots to tell about that and so much more. So Catherine, thank you so much for being here with us today. We so appreciate it.
Roberta, thank you so much. And I always love talking to you. So I'm kind of glad that we can share the conversation with other people. So thanks for the invitation.
You're very welcome. So full disclosure, Catherine and I talk all the time because we have our Norman Rockwell connection. I am on the board for the Norman Rockwell. And so we're always talking. And so I just really value our conversations. And I think it was through our conversations that I said, wait a second, Catherine has a story to share. And I want to know more about it.
Awesome. So, I will spill the beans.
Well, I always tell everyone, I said, you know, listen, this is not like, you know, we're not doing exposés here. You know, this is really about the person and it really is about your story. So, you know, one of the things, Catherine, is that you joined the Rockwell in 2024, but you are no stranger to the Berkshires. You grew up here.
Yeah, so I actually am a graduate of Monument Mountain Regional High School, and go Spartans. And I actually spent most of my childhood living both in nearby Columbia County in New York State and also in Berkshire County. And my parents actually still live in the area. My husband and I moved back here kind of mid-pandemic for a bunch of different reasons. Some of it had to do with wanting to be closer to family, but much of it had to do with the experience of spending the pandemic in our New York City apartment. And, you know, at heart, I'm kind of a country kid, you know, and I just felt like I needed air. I wanted to have access to nature. And I felt like it was time to make a pivot. And I was lucky enough to be able to make that pivot. And we moved here, we bought a house, and then I got this fabulous job. So it's been really a wonderful, I would say, change of life and circumstances and a wonderful new opportunity.
Well, I want to unpack that a little bit,
yeah,
going
sure.
back to the country girl in the city environment, because you were living that life for a little bit. So how did you feel out of sorts when you were in New York City? Because, you know, the city has an energy all its own. So how were you able to reconcile the two?
I think that as much as I, you know, spent a lot of my childhood here, my parents were from other places. And so when I was really young, we lived in the West Village in New York. Before that, we lived in San Francisco, and I was actually born in Illinois, in Evanston, Illinois. And so my early childhood was a lot more kind of moving around. Once my mom got a teaching job in Hillsdale, New York, which is why we moved up, and we left the city and moved up to Columbia County. But I always have felt like I'm kind of a person who has a foot in one place, New York, another in the Berkshires. And I actually think that that perspective has been really an interesting perspective to have moving up here, because I remember what it was like being a kid here. And I also know what it's like being one of those New York transplants, because I'm kind of both things, you know. And I, you know, I kind of have my local cred when I need it.
Yeah.
Like we did this one big renovation of our house, and our contractor was somebody I went to high school with. So, when it counts and it matters, it's really important to keep those connections and establish roots here again. And, I have felt one of the reasons I really love this job at Norman Rockwell is that it gives me a chance to connect with this place that I haven't lived in, quite honestly, for many, many years. And so, meeting people like you, working with a team here, and then also really thinking about audiences that are here. We'll talk more about that, I know, but maybe just to, I'll stop there.
No, I mean, I think it's fascinating because, obviously, like you said, you have both perspectives, and but inside you always felt like you sort of still retain that country girl at heart, which I so value. I feel like it's like the opposite for me because, I grew up in the Bronx, and I always had like so the city was integral to sort of my upbringing, and so I always have that at the center off sort of my being. And so there are a lot of things that I had to unpack when I moved, as I continue to move into sort of more rural environments. And so I think definitely it's an interesting mind shift.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny though, because your experience is more similar to my husband, who was born and bred in New York, and he doesn't know like how to walk through the forest. If you're walking on a walk with him, he like the twigs are like snapping back in my face, or he'll see a wet log, and he'll, those of us who know, you don't step on that because you might slip, right? And he doesn't know any of those things, so
Catherine, let me just, I was just talking to someone the other day about hiking and how when you're from the city, you do not necessarily gravitate to the forest, okay? For many reasons, you're not going into a forest on purpose. And so but one of the things that I've learned to love being here is hiking. I love it. It's a world unto its own, but that's not something that is natural to your experience in the city. You have to go away for that. And so absolutely, I'm sure with you as his guide, he will become acclimated to it. But it's so restorative. But again, it's the different things that you're used to in the environments. But I gotta ask, when you left for Brandeis, right? When you left for college, did you ever think you would come back?
I was a kid who was ready to leave, and I think they're in every, senior class of high school around here. There's the kids who are definitely staying and the ones that are going to college, but they know they'll be back. And I was not either of those. I thought I was gone for good. And I think that I didn't, as a younger person, I don't think I really appreciated the things that the Berkshires have to offer. And I was more hungering, thirsty for big city adventures. And I kind of went forward and I didn't really look back. And now that I'm back, I mean, it's been 30 plus years that I haven't lived in this area, and a lot of it has changed. This is the other thing that I'm very mindful of. There's been so much. The country is not so country anymore, and there are many different kinds of people that have made the Berkshires their home, and that's different than I think when I was growing up. So I don't feel I feel like I'm both at home, but home has changed,
You mentioned that part about the environment, but the cultural institutions and the museums have always been a part of the landscape. Did you find yourself going to museums and those places as a child?
Well, it's interesting you asked that, Roberta, because I, growing up here, I think that the other kids and I had such a deep appreciation for the culture that was here, and my friends all helped park cars at Tanglewood, and friends were working as ushers at the Berkshire Theater, and Norman Rockwell was an artist that I think all of us really, I mean, many of us really knew. People knew him, you know, because I'm old enough that he was still living around in Stockbridge when, you know, people were like my age or coming of age. I coming back here now, though, I feel like there's a sense about on the part of a lot of longtime residents that the cultural resources that are the reason so many New Yorkers and other people come to visit, a lot of people I think who are long-term residents, they don't really see that the cultural institutions are there for them. And I think one of the goals that I have in my work here is to make sure that, you know, every kid who grows up in Berkshire County has an understanding and an appreciation for probably the most important artist to, you know, to have lived here besides Edith Wharton and a couple of other really important figures. So I think that's the goal, is to have people participate in the culture. In New York City, I think kids growing up, you know, they go to museums all the time. They're on school trips. The museum
100%.
just like a subway ride away. And here it's, you know, it's a bigger deal to come to the museum. It's a bigger deal for a school to get the buses and get here. And I'm very aware of the barriers that exist today.
I think I Catherine, you know, you're tapping into something that is near and dear to my heart. Just that idea of, you know, access and accessibility and also awareness. You know, growing up in the city, we had field trips, as they were called. And those field trips took us to places like the Statue of Liberty, the Museum of Natural History. Those are part and parcel of sort of our education. And it was something that we just did. And the arts were a big part of public education. And so growing up, we took it for granted that we went to all these places and we just did it. And one of the things that you know, I recognize as a transplant, we've been here 15 years now this year, but as a transplant, I quickly saw how we would have an influx of folks from New York City and Boston and other major cities flooding the cultural institutions. But yet sometimes for whatever reason, and as you said, so many reasons abound. Sometimes you would have people here who may not have ventured into some of those spaces. And so that work has been so passionate to me as well. It's something, again, why we work so closely together you know, at the museum, sort of around this joint concern, right? To make sure that our doors are open to and not only our doors, but the doors of so many other cultures are open to so many folks who may not think it's for them, right? And so,
Exactly. You know, you make a really good, important point. One of the things I've done since I've come back is I just ask people that I meet along the way, like my dental hygienist or, you know, the person that, you know, is helping me in my house with the contracting job. And I ask them, like, do you know the Norman Rockwell Museum? Have you ever been there? And I can't tell you how many people have been to the museum when they were kids on a trip that they took with their class. And I think this is really why we have to make sure that we're connecting with schools, educators, and students, because if we don't introduce ourselves early on as a young person growing up in this area, just as you were describing, Roberta, the things you do become part of your identity, right? And we talked about walking in the woods. You talked about, you know, going to cultural organizations and venues growing up in the city. That becomes part of who you are. But if you don't have those opportunities, you are an adult and you've never been to the Norman Rockwell Museum. And then it really is a barrier. Like, why would I want to go to this place?
It's so foreign, and
Yeah, exactly.
it feels foreign. It feels for something that other people do. And you know, and I think even on a basic level, Catherine, it's almost like for some people, they think to themselves, okay, if I go to this museum, what do I do? Right? You know, what's the right thing to do? I think people wonder about those kind of things. And I think it's so important that we normalize the experience.
I feel like kids, though, are convincing an adult to make a trip like that versus being a young person and coming to the museum, I mentioned barriers. We are free for people that are 18 and under. So that's a pretty big barrier that is not there for a young person to come to the museum. We also have, I think, Norman Rockwell as an artist is an artist that's all about communicating and storytelling. And, his, if you think about, most of the paintings that he did were for the covers of magazines. And those covers and those images that he created had to be immediately discernible. They had to connect with an audience because, frankly, someone had to pick it up off the newsstand and buy it,
That's
like
right.
real reason that he learned how to really reach an audience. And I feel like the work here is really accessible once you come in the door, but that coming in the door, me crossing that threshold, is still really hard.
Yes, 100%. I mean, everything you said, Catherine, I second. And you're right. It really is about just saying, leaving your comfort zone, and saying, you know what, I'm gonna venture into a space that maybe I haven't before. And definitely the Rockwell is that place that is so welcoming. And I think for those who venture out and try something new, they're going to be so surprised and so happy that they did. And so definitely, and we're gonna get into all of the stuff Rockwell and all the stuff happening, but this is great because before we get into that, I kind of want to know who are your inspirations? Because you talk a lot about Rockwell, and obviously you studied art history and this was your world, but did you ever have, was he a part of your inspiration vision board when you think about it? Who else was there?
Well, I have a funny story, and it's perfect because you're asking about the backstory. So, I grew up in a family where my dad was sort of an amateur painter, but my grandfather was a professional commercial artist or illustrator, is what we would call him. And he is the person who invented the Kool-Aid man. He was working for a, his name was Claude Marvin Potts, and he was a, he worked in an advertising firm in Chicago. And they had the account for Kool-Aid. And the story goes that my grandmother had put out a pitcher. I think you know where this is going. And it was a frosty pitcher of some kind of, I don't know, it probably was water, knowing my grandma. And my uncle took his finger, he was the younger brother of my father, and he made a smiley face on the pitcher. And my grandfather saw this, and it was like, Eureka, this is what I'm going to do. And he pitched this idea, and that the rest is history. He did not do the, he invented the Kool-Aid face, the Kool-Aid man that would like go through brick walls, that came later.
But he did the face. Did he do the little body and all of that,
He
Catherine?
did the picture with the face, and I think it came later that they animated the picture. But
That's okay though. We needed to have him to give birth to the other.
So I always grew up with an appreciation for the way art, particularly illustration, is art that has a job to do. It has a message to give. And what has really appealed to me about Rockwell is just that we have artists who want to say something. Now, you asked me about inspiration. So that was a kind of personal story. But the other kind of inspiration is really all the people that I met along the way. And I really want to emphasize, and I know this is so important to you too, the role of mentorship in mentoring young people. And I had many people along my long path to the position I'm in who I had sought out when I saw someone who was doing something that I thought was really interesting, whose work I admired. I would reach out, and I think that's really important. And I have kids who are in their 20s, and I think they get shy about doing this, but people really love to talk about what they do, as when they're passionate about what they do. And I was fortunate to get some really good advice along the way, and people who kind of helped me make those steps from one, from being a kid who grew up here to, working in a big museum in New York City. And I never would have imagined I would have been able to do that. And it wasn't just me, it was all the people along the way. And I know that's so important to you.
It is so important. I definitely believe in mentorship. And I too remember getting that kind of advice from folks before me who would say, reach out to people, form a network, because for that same reason, like you said, people like to share things, especially if you've gone through something, right? You have an experience, you have a journey. People like to talk about that, and you can glean so much from that. In this day and age where we are sort of leaning so much into technology, where we are replacing those authentic conversations, face to face, eye to eye, with a text or an audio message. I do strongly believe in the power of human connection. I sometimes feel like a dinosaur saying these things, Catherine, because I feel like, it is not the popular opinion anymore, but I'm going to root for it because, as long as we have humanity, we have to champion the things that make us human, and conversation and engagement and all those things will forever matter. And when we think about networking and talking to someone, especially someone who's coming up, and giving them sort of the tools, you can't just do that via text.
Absolutely. Though, you tell a person who's, 18 years old to pick up the phone, that's hard
Oh my,
to
first of all, the phone
do.
is like, what? Like,
What?
and wait, and call them?
Right. So I say to them, my kids, and people who are, we have interns here who are fantastic. It's just, you can write that email, but like set up a Zoom or set up a meeting, take someone to
Absolutely.
coffee, whatever it is. But those kind of face-to-face encounters are where the real magic happens, I think.
It 100%. It is in that. And I think the pendulum always, we go so far this way, and then I think it's going to swing back. There was once a time when, and this goes back to my reporter days, when I remember I wrote a story on how they said these professions and trades were dying out, that no longer were some of these things going to be in effect and in operation, like tailors and all these other things. Obviously, the TV repairman, it's a done deal. I don't
Or
think
that one
I
was
don't think that's coming
face-to-face
back. But I think there are other things that, like, even typewriters are in vogue right now. There are a lot of folks who, even from a hobby standpoint, love the tactile experience of that. And so it's a choice. And I think we see with trades, people are recognizing the significance that has always been there around trades, and they're getting their just due. So I think that even when the pendulum swings one way, we'll still find a way to center ourselves, and really just understand that we got to keep humanity in the middle of all of it. Catherine, we're going to take a quick 30-second break, but we'll be right back, and we're going to continue this conversation.
Awesome.
89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Want more confidence using technology? PCTV offers free classes to help you navigate the internet, protect your privacy, and use your devices with ease. Whether you're a beginner or need a refresher, we've got you covered. Sign up today. Call 413-445-4234 or visit pittsfieldtv.org. Empower yourself with digital skills. because everyone deserves to stay connected. Brought to you by PCTV and the Alliance for Digital Equity, keeping communities connected.
Every Sunday night at 10 p.m., something strange happens to the airwaves of WTBR-FM. It's called The Mix. It is an experience like no other on this part of the planet. Witness a collection of fresh and classic beats that are guaranteed to make you move. The best part is, it is mixed completely live, uncut, unedited. So, for an exciting end to the weekend, tune your radio to WTBR-FM Sunday nights from 10 to midnight for The Mix.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR.
So for my listeners just tuning in, my guest today is Catherine Potts. She is a Chief Learning and Engagement Officer at the Norman Rockwell Museum. And we have been having a fascinating conversation of the power of engagement. We're just talking a little bit about her inspirations. And I am blown away because as someone who grew up like drinking Kool-Aid and always looking at the little Kool-Aid person on the box, I had no idea that Catherine's your grandfather.
Yeah.
Grandfather. Your grandfather, he created a little Kool-Aid man, that drawing that we all saw. And so she is no stranger to the art world. And obviously growing up with that all around her, she had influences. So it's not surprising that she ventured into a career that was so art-centered. Now, I have to say, you grew up in the country. You went to Brandeis. You said, I'm going to do city living. And you stayed in New York City. Did you make that your home base?
Yeah, I mean, New York was our home base for many, many years, 20 plus years, really. And we had an apartment, and now we're 100% Berkshires. We're really here. And I think that's an important thing. I see a lot of people who, you know, have the ability to kind of split their time between New York and this area. But we're all in here.
Yeah, it is. I think we talked a little bit about the people who come up and they get to explore and enjoy all that the Berkshires has to offer, but they only get to do it on a weekend level. And so obviously you're here year round. I just wanted to ask, before I know you got to the Rockwell, you were at the Whitney, and I know that that was a big piece of your life. I think all you have to do is say the Whitney. And it is so world renowned. It is such, I think everyone knows. And I guess, you know, why I wanted to bring that up was because I was doing some research and I got to see how you were interviewed by, they had a teen blog. And obviously that you were featured several times. And it made me realize that you really had a role to play in so many young people's lives. They obviously gleaned from your insights. But what are you most proud about when you think about your time with these young creatives? What are you most proud about of the work that you were able to hone there and help to inspire them to go on to their next chapters?
That's such a great question, because it's a great story to tell. So the big project that I worked on when I was at the Whitney was that we built a brand new museum downtown. The Whitney had been for many years up on the Upper East Side. And in 2015, we opened up downtown. And it was a tremendous project to kind of think through, if you were starting from scratch, building a building that would be the home for the museum that you want to become, what would it look like? And so I was very involved in a lot of decisions about what the spaces were like, what the museum would feel like, all of it. And then in 2015, when we opened, we had a special dedication day, and Michelle Obama was there. And It was probably the most proud moment in my whole career because she talked about how beautiful the building was, how important the work of the Whitney is in supporting American artists. But she said the thing that was most important about the Whitney were its education programs, and in particular, the work that we had done with young people. For many, many years, we had an outstanding teen program. And because I was in the position for such a long time, I would meet these teens early on in their own journeys. And then we would see them coming back, 20 years later, grown up. And I heard kind of anecdotally always about what an impact we had on the lives that they then pursued. And in that moment of celebrating the building, Michelle Obama made the point, it's not about the building, it's about the work. And
Right.
I felt like she shined a light on the importance of the work that we do with young people, and we changed lives. And that's not too many people can say in their daily life that they change young people's lives. And we did, my colleagues and I, and that is what I'm most proud of.
Love that. I love that so much. And if you guys hear me sounding kind of stuffy, I am battling a little bit of a cold, but I am powering through. I love that because I truly believe, Catherine, that when you plant those seeds, you never quite know when they will take hold, right? And sometimes your job is just to plant that seed and they're going to go forth and it's going to bloom somewhere else. You may or may not have the privilege of seeing it, but I think to know that you played a role in helping that development, it's so key. And they, in part, will always remember that. And they will take that and help someone else. And that is how we keep that chain of community going, because they're never going to forget that someone helped them.
And
And then
I
they become the
also,
mentor.
go ahead, sorry, go ahead.
No, they become the mentor to help someone else. And that's how we keep that spirit of humanity going.
Yeah, it's like paying it forward, right? And the other thing I would say is that in thinking about the work that we do with young people in the context of museum education, we, meaning the professional staff, we learn so much from the young people that we work with. And one of the things that I always think is like kind of a golden moment in museums is that when you the way we teach is that we'll have a group, let's say, in front of a work, and say it's you and me, Roberta, and we're standing in front of a work. And the first question that our educator would ask you is, what do you see? What do you notice? And my answer will be completely different, probably, than the thing that you see. And there you are, and you're having this experience where you're listening to someone else's perspective. You're giving them the space to have their own response to this work. And you're learning something about how someone else sees the world, their perspective. And that's so moving and kind of, I don't know, it's such a simple thing. But, in our lives today, we don't spend a lot of time listening to each other, right? And, people talk about echo chambers and all that. And that is for sure true. But there's something about the space of the museum that creates this kind of exchange and engagement, which is different than anything else that I have experienced in my life.
Because you're left with, when you think about it, you come in there and it's not really a space that you're inviting, sort of a third party. It's you and the art. And it's you and your mind, and it's you looking at the art and then ingesting it and thinking, what does this mean to me? And to your point about it's going to look different, right? So we both can be standing in front of that piece of artwork and each take away our own perspective. And that's the power of it. And then we get to talk about it. And we get to talk about what we see. And the beauty of Rockwell, when we think about his pieces, it's so they're so layered. So there are so many little gems and so many little things within a Rockwell that you can look and see, and you're like, oh, I didn't even notice that. It's beautiful.
It's all there for you. And back to your question about people coming to the museum, I think that in the old days, we used to say like, we used to talk about museum education as kind of art appreciation, and there's here are the things you need to know to appreciate the art. But because of what we just talked about, how you and I will come away with very different ideas and experiences, there's you're free to kind of come and bring your own interpretation to the work. And you know, because there are no answers, you can't be wrong.
Right. Good point.
And I hope that makes people feel, you know, less inhibited, let's say, about, you know, coming into the museum. We talk a lot about it within the field of museum education about threshold fear. And, you know, for people who, like you or me, who are pretty comfortable in these spaces, it's easy to forget that people really do have that kind of trepidation. And I always say to people, like, if you want to understand, I'm talking to colleagues here who don't completely get it. And I'm like, okay, you should go to some place where you don't feel super comfortable. Like, go to a house of worship that's not your own, that you don't know the rules. Or, you know, go to a nightclub with, like, young people dancing a dance that you don't know how to dance. And I think that's the experience that a lot of people in a museum space. But, you know, we really at the Rockwell, we try very hard to communicate to people that you are welcome and we want you to be here. And I always say to our guides that, you know, you have one chance to make a first impression.
And yes.
That's why I like how you walk through the door.
Yes.
Say hi to you or just even the first 5 minutes of a tour. Like you have to make sure that people feel really comfortable.
Catherine, what you said right there is that's it right there. It's those first few seconds and minutes of engagement that sets the whole tone, right? That as soon as you walk in, hi, how are you? We're so happy to see you. We hope you enjoy. Do you need any help? How can we help you? Right. You're setting the stage for a very inviting experience. Right. So I think it's laying that groundwork because the art is there. Right. But it's getting them to the art. And so they need to be able to feel comfortable. And so I love the Rockwell for so many reasons, but that commitment to understanding engagement on a very simplistic level, right? This is not, we're not setting out a whole buffet every day for people to come in. This is not what this is. This is literally simple courtesy and manners.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so tell me a little bit, I mean, there's so much that is always happening at the Rockwell, but I think we are in the summer season right now. And I think there are some things that you're excited about. So there are a couple of initiatives coming up, one that revolves around the Declaration of Independence. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. And I also want to just let everybody know that you are a big part of that day-long program. So on July 4th, we are celebrating America's independence with a program called We Hold These Truths. And it's a day of discussion and art making and music. We're collaborating with the Guthrie Center here in Housatonic, Mass. And we will have Annie and Abe Guthrie performing. We're also, we'll have Doug Mishkin, who is a folk singer. He's going to be singing actually in the galleries. We're going to have pop-up kind of quick talks about Norman Rockwell's Four Freedoms paintings and civil rights paintings. And then the centerpiece of the day is you, Roberta, and the Declaration. So Roberta has graciously agreed to introduce our public reading of the Declaration of Independence. And we have invited 30 plus members of the our community leaders and members to come in and each read a short piece of the Declaration, and then together we will read the last part of the Declaration together. But Roberta, I would love for you to talk a little bit about some of the things that you were telling me about, about the Declaration and why it's important and how you think about it today.
Absolutely. You know, I think, Catherine, you know, at the heart of it, we think about this great American experiment. And we think about, this foundation for who we desire to be. And so when we think about documents like the Declaration of Independence, it's a roadmap. It's a guide to the greatest of ourselves, right? The greatest being of ourselves and how we can aspire to be like that. Now, do I think that we have achieved all of that? No, I don't. I think that we are constantly a people. Every generation, we're constantly a people striving toward the best of ourselves. And so I think this is a great opportunity for us to, as a community, and I think it's always important for us always to think about what are we doing as individuals to bring that to reality. I think it's important because we know that community is really a reflection of individuals. And so it really is a time and opportunity for people, if they haven't heard the Declaration of Independence before, actually to hear it, but also to think about it. We celebrate 4th of July, Independence Day, but what does it mean? What does it mean? And are we then thinking about it as just a static document? Or are we thinking about this something as a living, breathing document that every generation gets a chance to think about? What does it mean to me? And am I living up to the ideals? And so, my hope is that anyone who comes out that day will come with that sort of that mindset to listen, to reflect, and to take back something into their day-to-day experience that will empower them to be their best version of themselves. And I think as individuals, when we can be the best version of ourselves, then we are the best version of our community, right? And so, right, we need all of the individuals to add up to the sum to make it a whole.
Yeah, I well said. And the other thing I was hoping that you would share a little bit about is, this is a document that has some sort of baked in hypocrisies, specifically, around like all men are created equal. Do you want to share a little bit about that too?
Well,
that's part of the context.
Well, I think, yes. I mean, if we following history, as much as we know that, why the Declaration of Independence was written, we also know that at the time it was written, it did not reflect all men. And that's why it's important to look at it as it's aspirational, right? It is not set in stone, because if it were set in stone, then it would have included all people, all Americans. And it did not at the time, right? It was at a time when enslavement was still in effect. And so, we had two basically conflicting ideals, right? But when you look at what we could be, right, you have to also look at what was happening. And so there's a duality, and that's where the choice comes in. And I think there was a choice that the people, when they wrote it, obviously there was a choice to write it in the face of all that was happening around them, i.e. enslavement, and still focus on that. But we today get to choose how we look at history in its totality. And we have to encourage ourselves not to be linear, right? We can't be linear. We have to be able to look at history in its totality and understand that two things can be true at the same time. Yes, this is a document that was written to allow our country to be its greatest version of itself. But yes, it was also true that while it was written, we weren't being the greatest version of ourselves. So, we have to look at it through that lens. But what does that mean for us today? What does that mean? And how do we ingest history? Right. So these are the lessons, right? We're not negating the history, because that's no good either. There are folks who are like, well, we don't want to just think about that part. We don't want to go there. Well, you kind of have to, because that's a part of the history. It actually happened. So you can't just ignore that. But again, two things can be true at the same time. We can have a document that helped us to aspire to be great, and also understand that at the same time, we were not being great to all.
Well said. Thank you. So Roberta will be introducing the declaration, and our kickoff will be at 1 o'clock. It's free for anyone who wants to come. We'll be in the back of the Norman Rockwell Museum, overlooking the beautiful Berkshire Mountains. Bring a picnic, bring a blanket, and I think it'll be a fantastic event. After the Declaration is read, we're going to have Annie and Abe Guthrie are going to be singing, and it'll be a great way, I think, to spend the day before, say, you go to see the fireworks. So.
Well, first of all, Catherine, I'm so not used to being, offering up my thoughts on the show. I'm like, it's always about the guests. So, very, I, you know, it's so interesting and so different, but I'm so happy to share my thoughts. And, this is a really important event, and really a great opportunity again for people to reflect. So thank you for the few minutes to share my thoughts, because I always like to give the floor to my guest and try to take the
I
back
don't know.
seat.
I think, as I said at the start, I feel like you've been such a great partner in so many things that I've been doing here at the museum, and it's really wonderful to have your participation. So
Thank you.
we can shine a light on you.
Well, thank you. Okay, so we have that going on. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about what's happening at the Rockwell that you want people to know about?
I think this summer, what I would really like to kind of amplify is that we are having a show of this artist, Walter Wick. And you probably don't know him by name, but I bet you would know him if you remember the I Spy books. These are those books that probably some of you read to your kids, or your kids are still reading, that are these photographic kind of arrangements of objects that you can like lose yourself in. And we have a whole show of the artist that is behind those books, and you'll see his art. You'll learn about how he makes the things that he makes. And every Saturday throughout the summer, we have free art making activities that are connected both to the Walter Wick show and also to Norman Rockwell's paintings. So if you come with your family, or if you're just a creative person who wants to come, we have opportunities for you to experiment with materials, to kind of to explore your own creativity. And I find when we have art making activities, it isn't just the kids that really enjoy it, and we really encourage families and adults to really try their hand at. Kids get more time with crayons than probably we do as adults, but we are doing some really fabulous programs, and we have wonderful educators who will really provide incredible insights into the art, and it's a chance for you to kind of make some art.
Definitely. And if they want to just check out like a full list of things, they can go to nrm.org.
That's right.
Okay.
So I invite everybody to join us this summer, and especially for July 4th. We hope to see you there.
Great. So I'm going to ask about you, Catherine. When you're not working and when you're not doing all of this educating, all of this work, all of these good things, what are you doing for fun?
Well, okay. So I'm really trying to learn how to garden. So, I don't know anything about gardening, and
Same.
I have a house. You too, right? So I was a kid, I never gardened. That was something my parents did, and I didn't really. We often lived in apartments, so we didn't even have a house or a garden. But it's been a big challenge, and the biggest challenge for me right now is that. And this is where it's maybe what I'm doing in my free time, but I'm not loving it so much. I have a groundhog that lives next door in the house next door to us, underneath the house. And this animal comes out, and anytime I plant something that is to its liking, it gobbles it up. So I now have learned about like pest sprays that you put on things. And I planted all these flowers, and the groundhog came through and nibbled the tops of all of the flowers off, and now they're just like dying. So,
Oh.
as I say, I'm trying to garden, but right now it's not looking so good. So.
Listen, Catherine, I heard that pause before you said animal. I felt like you wanted to give it more vigor in terms of a term, but you kept it safe for radio.
You know that movie, the Caddyshack, where like Bill Murray has his like nemesis is the groundhog. I kind of feel like I'm that person, and this is not like a little groundhog. This is a big groundhog that has lived a long, long time, and it's I actually tried to have like a, special person came with a humane trap, and of course he wasn't interested. The apple with like that was supposed to entice him to go into the trap is still rotting in the middle. So
If he's been around a while, Catherine, he's like, listen, lady, that ain't gonna work with me.
So I think I concede that I've lost. So anyway, so that hasn't been so much fun. But really what it mostly has been, the upside of living here is back to the one of the reasons I said that I really wanted to be here was to have access to the outdoors, to be able to hike, just to be able to come out and sit on my porch and drink a cup of coffee and kind of watch the world go by. I really value that in a way, perhaps as a kid, I probably didn't really appreciate it.
It's so restorative. I think, when growing up again in the city and there are so many lights, you never realize just the beauty of the stars. And one of the things I love to do when I come home and I look up into the sky, there's no light pollution. So you can see
You can actually
all of
see the
you
stars,
can see the
right?
stars, and it's the same sky. It's not like we're getting different sky. It's the same sky without all the lights, though. And it's such a beautiful thing. And I always say it's like, as you get older too, you appreciate different things. Did I appreciate that I could see stars or could not see stars in my 20s? Probably not. I didn't care. But now it's like it's the little things that make you take pause and make you say, oh, I really like that. And I guess it's just life,
It is well said.
We're going into our lightning round as we're wrapping up, Catherine. So I got a few
Yes.
questions for you. What is the last good book that you've read?
Oh my gosh. I read the book Trust.
Oh.
It's about a financier in New York, and it's one of those stories that has kind of cobbles together different perspectives on the same thing. And I didn't like the book in the beginning, and then I kept reading it, and I really, really enjoyed the book. Beautifully
Oh.
written and interesting characters, and kind of has sort of this surprising shift of perspectives that kind of kept me guessing. It felt like a puzzle that I was trying to figure out.
Oh, okay. And I know some people may or may not watch TV, but I'm just gonna say a TV show or series.
Gosh, I've been watching, it's a little bit dark, but I've been watching on Apple TV Servant. It's a little bit like a gothic novel, but set in a contemporary times. And it's if you like Twilight Zone, you would like this. And they're really short episodes, so it's perfect for binge watching. I usually watch two at a time, and it's four seasons, so there's a lot.
Well, I am just amazed, Catherine, that you, with everything that you're doing, you're able to read and you're able to watch these shows and able to do all this fabulous work. Because I know that even at the, I can't even keep my eyes open sometimes. And it's like I'm struggling, but I have my books, I have my summer reading, and I'm going to be intentional about getting my going through my list. So, Catherine, it was an absolute delight. I mean, there's so much that we didn't get to
I feel
today in
like
our
we could keep
conversation.
talking, but yeah,
We
but
could. And you know what? I am not opposed to having a part two because I did that a couple of times with guests who there was just when you talk about that cup overflowing of content, there's just so much. And so, please know that the invitation is always there if you want to come back and talk about some more things that are happening and just get into some other stuff. We can just chat. I mean, it's been a great conversation, Catherine.
it's been my pleasure, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. So for my guest tuning in, I've had Catherine Potts, the Chief Learning and Engagement Officer at the Norman Rockwell. We've had a great conversation today. To everyone out there, I hope you have a great day. Whatever you're doing, enjoy and thank you so much. Bye-bye.